I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Outside, this is KSL Outdoors, brought to you by Trax Power Sports Rentals. 2 hours of stories and information on hunting, fishing, and high adventure. KSL Outdoors with Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome into hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. Just a note, we're recording this program on Thursday for playback this morning for your enjoyment. We sure appreciate you being here every Saturday morning for another edition of KSL Outdoors Radio. And the hope is, Russ, and you and I had this conversation early on when we met each other, the hope is that people can sort of escape without leaving the couch or the armchair or the car or whatever, and just live vicariously through some of this outdoor fun.
And maybe somehow we can inspire you to get off the couch.
Maybe we'll give you an idea that
give you some place to go.
Sparks something for you. Let me give you an idea of what's coming up in this hour. In just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Mark Wade. He's road tripping alone this week. I feel rather sorry for him, actually. But he'll be joining us. We're going to talk about safety in the outdoors with all these crazy flash floods. My gosh. You know, we asked for everybody to pray for rain. The governor did that. There have been calls to pray for rain. So the prayers happened. And, hoo boy, did we get the water, at least in places. And albeit brief, it caused some real damage in some of our smaller towns in central and southern Utah. And I mentioned at the top of the show that even in places like the Bountiful Bench and up in the Holiday area, over the weekend there was a storm that dropped 2.8 inches of water. And you have to realize that our average for an entire summer is 3 inches of water. So we got a full summer's worth of water in however long that storm was sitting there.
I had minor flood damage.
Did you?
Just in our little room off of the kitchen. Floor got all wet.
Well, and at your house, you've got that side or the driveway that slopes all the way down. Yeah. I worry sometimes that the water runs down
into
there.
It's never backed up.
So we'll talk to Mark about that. Roger Agate's still set to join us from Bear River Lodge, and then Russ is going to give us our camp spot of the week, which you're going to take us to Wyoming
today. Wyoming, yeah. Why not? It's 4 hours there to where we're going. It's 4 hours down to sites in southern Utah.
Yeah,
same difference from Salt Lake.
Navi stepped away for a minute. He'll rejoin us again to wrap up the program at the bottom of the hour. I want to bring into the conversation, though, the Hunter Education Program Director for the Division of Wildlife. That's Ray Lynn Takeda. And talk about archery safety. We get together annually about this time. And, Russ, you were saying when we were up at Snowbird over the weekend, up Little Cottonwood Canyon, which, by the way, I didn't mention this at the top of the show, but it was really special for us to have you and Chris with us at Snowbird. I haven't talked a lot about it, but my brother-in-law, who has been a part of this program in the past, world freestyle champion, my wife's twin brother, passed away a couple of weeks ago unexpectedly, and we had a great memorial service that actually started up at Snow Basin in the morning, and then we moved in the afternoon to Snowbird. And I just wanted to say thank you to the folks up there, Dave Fields, who on short notice, because we had some logistical challenges, pulled some strings and made it a really wonderful moment for my family, for our friends, for the friends of Bob. And we had a great send-off for Bad Bob over the weekend. So,
yeah, great time. You know, I didn't know Bob real well. I see him on and off over here. But over here is Tim's house.
Yeah, yeah.
But great celebration. Beautiful spot there. Yeah.
Anyway, you mentioned that you saw some archery guys with bows in their hands, and maybe they were just doing some target practice.
In retrospect, they were headed back to their cars. They didn't look dirty enough to have been hunting.
No.
You know, so they were nice, clean clothes. But everybody packing a bow,
Yeah. Well, the archery season's coming up Saturday, August 21st. It gets underway with the Archery Any Bull Elk season, and Ray Lynn joins us now. That was sort of a long roundabout introduction, Ray Lynn. Thanks for being patient with me this morning. We always want to talk safety, though, because, you know, as handy as a bow and those arrows are, it really does pose a significant risk for getting hurt.
It does. There's a lot of safety things to think about. A lot of people think, oh, it's a bow and arrow. But to be out hunting, those arrows are going to be sharp as all get out. And so you need to be careful with those. We've seen injuries where, you know, someone's walking, carrying their arrow, and they're walking through and stab themselves in the leg. Or they, you know, stab their arm, cut their hand. So there's a lot of things to be think about. They need to cover those arrows when they're not shooting, when they're just walking.
Yeah, and falling down. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been gawking at something or taking a photo and tripped over a rock. You wouldn't want to do that with a pack of arrows on your back either.
No, you need to be very careful. You know, we want everybody to have fun, but we want everybody to be safe too.
Yeah. The other safety conversation we usually have, and I worry about this a lot, is somebody who may have just purchased themselves a tree stand and doesn't fully know how to properly put that thing up there, but they're not made to hold a bunch of weight. They should be able to hold your weight if it's installed properly, but that's a dangerous proposition too.
Right. You need to make sure that that tree stand holds your weight, but also you got to take into consideration the weight of the equipment you're going to be taking.
Right.
You know,
cool,
if you got
a cooler
all your snacks,
full of ice.
Packs, yeah, all of that, your snacks.
Yeah.
You know, and you need to make sure you know how to install it in that tree.
Yeah.
You know, on some lands, whether it be Forest Service, BLM, some of those you cannot use those screw-in steps to go into the trees. You have to have portable steps, a little ladder that gets up there. So you just need to know what the rules and regulations are for where you're going to place that tree stand.
Yeah, and aren't there safety devices somehow that you can strap yourself to the tree in case that the tree stand itself bails on you?
Right. It's like a harness. You attach it to yourself and then also to the tree. So if anything happens, you will be hooked to the tree, and hopefully then be able to lower yourself down carefully.
Some of these tips, these recommendations are much like we would tell you for the general deer rifle season. And the main one is knowing your target, know the range of the arrow you're about to let fly, and make sure you're looking beyond your target for anything that could be in trouble on the other side.
Right. And know your physical limitations, too. You know, if you physically can't pull a bow that's heavy enough to go a long distance, you know, you got to make sure you know what your distance is, and, you know, practice before you go. Practice, 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 but practice with the broadheads that you're going to be using, because the weight of the practice tips compared to your broadhead are a little different.
Yeah. And Russ, I don't know, have you ever spent much time trying to shoot a bow?
No, just a long bow.
I spent enough time to bruise the bejeebers out of the inside of my arm, I'll tell you that. And it was it was so painful, and I never was getting any better that I just stopped. But I was surprised to see the statistics. And I've heard hunters tell me this before on why they enjoy using or participating in the archery season. First of all, it's a fair chase thing for them. Maybe they've been a rifle hunter most of their lives, and they sort of gotten bored with it, and they're looking for more of a challenge and more of a fair chase for the animal. But I've been told that you can actually hit with solid force, especially with these carbon arrows, a distance as much as a football field.
Wow.
They say that up as far as 100 yards.
That number just surprised me. For whatever reason. So you do need to be very, very careful. What about preparation now? We mentioned that the guys that were up Little Cottonwood Canyon were probably doing some target practice, and they were hopefully doing it in an area that was safe to do that in, but that's always a recommendation.
Right, as a practice, but also check your equipment. You know, if you used it last year, say you fell on the hunt and you haven't checked anything, you know, make sure there's no cracks in the lamination, that, you know, your strings are still all okay. You know, make sure those broadheads are sharp, that they didn't just get all rusty over the year that you've had them sitting in storage.
Permission, too. If you're going to be on private property, this goes without saying, you know, all the other hunts we have conversations about, you need to make sure you get permission from a private landowner before you hunt there. Know the boundaries of the areas that you're going to be hunting. That is a given. But tell everybody about your bow hunter education class. That might be off the radar of some people.
We do have a bow hunter education class. It is not mandatory in Utah to take bow hunter education to hunt with archery equipment, but it is available, and it's a great resource to learn some of this information on, you know, the safety aspects, the ethics, the hunting methods. It's we offer an online, and we also offer an instructor-led. So either way, you could do the all online and learn all this information, and it's good knowledge.
But that is not mandatory to hunt?
Not in Utah.
Okay.
Hunter education is, but not bow hunter education.
Okay. All of the information we're talking about, of course, can be found on the division website, which is wildlife.utah.gov. Just want to give you those dates again. The archery any bull elk begins on August 21st. That's the general buck mule deer archery.
Yeah. Yep.
And go ahead.
Yeah, there's a few that start that day. So the any bull elk archery and the archery spike elk also start on that same day. So you've got three hunts that will start that day.
Yeah, right around the corner. And I know some folks are really excited about it. One other thing I would throw in here as we wrap up is just know what the restrictions are for fires. If you're going to be out for several days and doing some camping, we've had such a risk and such a dry, hot summer until the last couple of weeks. Make sure you know where you can and where you can't start fires if you're going to stay out there for a couple of days. Ray Lynn, always a pleasure to catch up with you. Thanks for your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Ray Lynn Takeda, again, is the Hunter Education Program Director. Wildlife.utah.gov. If you're going to get out and shoot a bow, good luck this season. Be careful out there. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're headed road tripping. Mark Wade.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's time to do a little road tripping. Bob's at Lake Powell, so we'll do it here with Mark Wade.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road.
Getting on the road right now means you could encounter just about anything, Rush. We talked earlier in the program about this crazy weather in central and southern Utah, which is where Mark happens to be checking in with us. What was the story you had about a train that was actually pushed off the tracks? I hadn't heard that one.
Well, it was eroded under, we understand that the rain, the storms along some of the creeks eroded underneath the tracks, and they lost the engines. I think it was three engines, wow. Mark.
Yeah, and like you say, it actually dropped some of the payload, you know, the stuff they were carrying. Yeah. So
that
was out in the West Iron County.
That'd be way out there, yeah.
Have you ever been caught in a flash flood situation, Mark, in all the time you spend outdoors?
You know, I've had a couple of experiences. One in particular I thought I'd just tell you about. I was just a young buck, and I went out with a couple of young friends out on the Cottonwood Creek in Salt Lake City area in spring runoff. And we thought, you know, let's get these big tractor tires and float down the river. We're going to have a good grand old time. And we're floating down together, and we came around the bend, and there was one of those water vortexes, you know, that kind of sucks down straight down. It looks like a tornado, but it's in the river.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's in the bend of the river, and one of the people got sucked over towards it and panicked, got off their tube, and it sucked them down the vortex.
Oh, my God.
Imagine what you would do.
Did they come out the other side?
Nope, they stayed in the vortex. I saw the hand go down, and I didn't see him come out anywhere. They didn't come around the bend. I'm watching, and it got more shallow down around the corner, and nothing. So we paddle over to the side of the bank. We lean out over the edge of the bank and reach our hands down into the vortex and pull them, literally grab a hand that's spinning around down in that vortex. Pull them up.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was crazy.
You could have all been sucked in there.
Yeah.
Well, the craziest thing is that then we talk each other into keep going.
How young were you at the time?
Yeah, pretty young, pretty young. A few tears are shed, and we talk for a while, and then we keep floating. Yeah. And we hit a log jam going down the river, and the tubes get sucked up to the log jam, and another person gets sucked under the log jam.
Mm.
And so this was crazy young person thing, but that's just, this was not that deep. The sides of the river were being eroded away. Trees were falling into the river, making these log jams and these vortexes. So just the examples of, you need to be pretty darn careful, even in situations that look like they're pretty innocent.
Well, and especially in early spring, late fall, those two times in Utah, you just don't know. I mean, you get rain one minute, you get snow the next. And when you get these gully washers, they literally can take a trail out in front of you. And what you thought was your path home no longer is passable.
And if you're a long way down the trail and trying to do a loop, it really causes some problems, doesn't it, to be out on trails when they've washed out. And so there's lots of different things that could be a challenge. I was up with a group up on one of the mountains in southern Utah, and it was a larger group, and we'd taken them up there to do a hike. We were guiding them, and we got into, it was in early October, but a snowstorm blew in for about an hour and a half. And it was blowing so hard that the snow was going sideways into your ear, you know, and we couldn't do the hike. So all we did is we said, we're not going to hike. We're not prepared for this. We're going to go down. And we went down an elevation about 5,000 feet and found a different trail.
Yeah. Getting to lower elevation is important, but not if it's going to, you know, risk your life further by trying to move around. Sometimes to me, and you mentioned it, these storms, especially like the ones we've had that come through here in the last couple of weeks, they come in hard, they go out fast. And a lot of times, if you can just find a safe place to hunker down, you can wait that thing out, and then you're going to be better off on the other side than trying to flee or get to somewhere in the midst of all of that. We've only got about 90 seconds left here, but I do want to focus on things that you carry with you. Certainly you need to know the weather forecast before you go, and whatever that forecast says, plan for the worst of it and have those things in a backpack with you.
Well, especially if you're going up in high elevations, always have a coat, some gloves and a beanie, stuff for warmth, for insulation, right? You want to be, even in the summertime, you can get caught in the storm. Hail will come up in those high elevations, even in every summer afternoon sometimes. And so you've got to be prepared for that. You need hydration. You need an emergency shelter. I always carry just one of those cheap plastic ponchos with me, and it can make a shelter quickly. I carry something to make a fire, and I carry some first aid. So water, warmth, shelter, fire, and first aid. And you can learn more about some of the things we recommend on our website, on our blog at roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com.
Yeah.
There you go.
And in the minute we have left here, there are some benefits to this. First of all, we need the water. There's no doubt about that. But Russ, I know you have experienced this because we've been on rides together on the motorcycles. One of the benefits on the other side of a rainstorm in the summer is the smell.
Oh, the smell and the visual. Coming up Trail of the Ancients out of Height. One day I was at the tail end of a big rainstorm, and the waterfall's coming off, and I had to cross a little bit of water on the bike, but it wasn't too deep.
I've told the story many times, Mark, about the waterfalls that were coming down the Red Rock Canyons as we headed into Lake Powell off of the Colorado, and it was rare enough that the guides on our rafts, which made that trip once or twice a week, shut the engines down and got their cameras out. But sometimes you get treated to something like that.
Well, that's just it. You know, the weather comes and goes usually pretty quickly, and it cleans things up. It makes the colors more vibrant. And then when you get waterfalls and things like that, Zion, we were in Zion, Bob and I, not too long ago, 80 waterfalls inside the park.
We were in safe spots.
We made sure we stayed in safe areas. We weren't in slot canyons. And it was spectacular. So one of the best experiences of my life.
Yeah, you do want to stay clear of slot canyons for sure. All right. Mark Wade, as always, thanks for your help. Go road tripping. It's roadtrippingwithbobandmark.com. We did check in with Bob at Lake Powell. He's doing good down there. So, Mark, stay safe, and we'll look forward to talking to you next time.
Good to talk with you both.
Joins us next.
stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.